Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness. Brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
And welcome to the Forever Family Foundation's beautiful radio program, Signs of Life. I'm your host for this week, Angelina Diana, where we give you another version of the radio show called Signs of Life Light, where we have an opportunity to bring you interesting guests that are a little different, maybe not exactly all scientists or readings from the other side, but a different viewpoint on how we can look at the afterlife. And we will be welcoming shortly Chip Reichenthal to the program. He's written a fictional book called Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. It's a very interesting read. I had the chance to read it, and we're going to go through some interesting and fascinating things about the book, as well as talk about our guest's background, which is just as interesting and just as fascinating. Before we actually get to that, I would love it if you get an opportunity to check out the Forever Family Foundation's website. It's foreverfamilyfoundation.org. It was recently updated, beautiful website. It was always beautiful, in my opinion. But this particular new version is fabulous. It's really easy to navigate through, and there's a lot of information there. And there's some really cool events coming up. I'm hoping that if you get an extra moment to go to the website and see the things that are coming up that the foundation has created, I really feel like it's a wonderful opportunity for you not to only be a part of a great organization, but also to help out a wonderful 501(c) not-for-profit. The foundation is soon approaching. It's really beginning almost its 10th year in existence. I've had the honor and the opportunity to be part of the foundation as a volunteer and a medium since almost its inception, maybe shy by 6 or 7 months. And it's been an honor for me to be a proud volunteer and sit on the board and be a certified medium. And to sit back and see how the foundation has taken off just on the energy alone of you, the people, the volunteers, the members — membership is free, by the way — really your energy has made it be what it is. And it's because of your support and your ability to come to the events. If you can't come to an event, if you simply just become a member and receive the newsletter and you're touched by what the newsletter has in it. It's chock full of information. It has an Ask the Medium section. It has a scientific section. It has inspirational stories, dazzle shots, which is — some scientists used to use the term dazzle shot, which would mean an interesting validation from the other side. And if you're touched just by that, and you can consider giving a donation to the foundation, it helps bring us some great programs. And if you can, go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and see the wonderful things that are happening from an event called Spirit Sunday, which is in New York, where two wonderful mediums, Lynn LeClaire and Rebecca Ann LeCicero, will be basically going into an Italian restaurant as you're eating some scrumptious food, and they'll be delivering messages to you. This is a fundraiser for us. And really, I think the reason we have another event that we do called Night of Mediums, which is very large with maybe 10 or 11 mediums, and there's a medium per table, and it's really, it's lovely. That's a great event too, and I believe they're going to be recapping that again at this year's conference in November. But the reason why two mediums, it's really your chance to experience different mediumship styles of two really well-qualified mediums. They'll move around the audience. They'll be directed by spirit. If the medium should come to you, it's really important that you respond to them to let them know if the information is correct or not. It's really a beautiful evening and a great fundraiser for us. So that will be held in Huntington, New York on September 14th with two fabulous mediums. I think this is the first time they're doing this event, and it sounds so interesting. And I hope if you can be in the New York area, you'll consider being a part of it, because it's really a wonderful opportunity for you to see mediumship, spirit being represented, and also you're helping out a wonderful cause. The Afterlife Convention is happening. It's the 8th original annual Afterlife Conference that the Forever Family Foundation is putting on, and it's really in conjunction with some other events that are going on. Now, normally the convention, or I should say the conference, would go from like a Friday night, and last year it went till Monday. They had an event called Medium Monday. This year, there's other events going around connected with the Rhine Research Center. And I had quite an opportunity. It was many, many years ago. I had the opportunity with some Forever Family Foundation members to go to the Rhine Research Center. And it was really a wonderful weekend. I'll never forget it. It was near the beginning when I was involved with the foundation. And the Rhine Research Center has beautiful different activities, things that you can do. There's so much. I mean, you could actually make this a week's activity event if you'd like. You can really pick and choose what really works for you. So my hope is that you'll check it out. The actual conference itself is from November 5th. You can go from November 5th to November 11th. The original conference is kind of wrapped up near the end of that weekend, where there'll be, I understand, I didn't get a chance to look at it yet, to be honest with you, but there's usually mediumship, there's wonderful scientists, just really a lot going on. So I want to, if I could, tempt you to go take a look at that. There's really a wonderful thing that you can be a part of. And if you go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org, you'll see that. And some of the other information that you can be a part of. You could make a donation to help out. There's ways to help out without you even spending extra money towards the foundation. If you purchase a book through the website to Amazon.com, a purchase you'd be making already, there are portions of that that will go to the foundation, as well as iGive.com. There's really so many things to check out. I also want to encourage you to get involved socially. That's right. The Forever Family Foundation has gone social. You could be involved with us on Facebook and Twitter. There's an opportunity for you to support us just by liking the page, and you'll get some updates there too as well. And the neat thing about this, the social website now, is that if you find that you're inspired by the Forever Family Foundation and you just like the page or even share something, your friends could get involved too as well. And the more support we can get, because the Forever Family Foundation is trying to change worldview, the more support we can get, the better it will be for everyone, because we could make this world, I believe, a better place. Okay, so what I'd like to do now is take a short break, and when we return from our break, we're going to have an opportunity to speak to this week's guest, Chip Reichenthal, who's written a wonderful book, a fictional book called Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. Now, if that doesn't make it come back, I don't know what will. We'll be right back.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is atransc.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Have you lost a loved one and feel that they are gone forever? Do you sometimes wonder how people can continue meaningful lives after devastating grief takes hold? Come join Forever Family Foundation in Connecticut on July 25th through the 27th as they host a special, all-inclusive weekend of sharing, learning, exploring, and discovering. This weekend will not only deal with the challenges of loss and grief, but professional facilitators and mediums will also focus on ways we can all communicate with deceased loved ones and maintain our relationship with them. Attendees will be experiencing grief recovery techniques, spirit communication by certified mediums, meditations, psychic development exercises, and will also learn about some of the scientific evidence that we survive physical death. The weekend will feature small workshops for a relaxed and hands-on experience. Bereaved parents can also register for a separate program starting on the evening of July 24th through the 25th. For more information, visit www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. That's www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org, 631-425-7707. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation, located on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I'm your host for this evening, Angelina Diana, and I thank you so much for joining us. We have a very interesting hour, and I really want you to stay close to the radio. And if you have some questions, you can give us a call. But our guest is very intriguing, so I find it, you know, if there aren't any phone calls, I often find in this format, it's because people are just listening and they don't want the guests to stop talking. But our guest is author of a fictional book called Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. Chip Reichenthal is a published author and has hosted two radio shows on different networks. Chip hopes to highlight the positive and loving side of the potential communication with discarnate energies or spirit, especially examining the role of accurate historical research, theoretical physics, belief systems, mind over matter, and consciousness as an energy form. I'd like to welcome Chip Reichenthal to the program. Hi, Chip.
Oh, hello, Angelina. Thank you so much for having me on. This really is a personal, it's kind of like a dream come true, you know.
Oh.
I've been a huge fan of the Forever Family Foundation, and I absolutely love the work that they're doing.
Oh,
You know, I've followed your career for a time, too, and I'm a fan of yours as well. So this is kind of like a huge day for yours truly.
Oh, that's very sweet.
I
appreciate that.
I really appreciate being on.
Well, that's very kind, and I hope that, and I can tell by your energy that you really are a fan of communication and helping those understand that communication is loving. And that's what we're going to talk about at the time that we're together. Your book, I've read it. It's very good. It's very interesting. It's a wonderful read. It's called Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. It is a fictional book, but I have to tell you, before I got to the end of it, where you kind of let the cat out of the bag that some of it's based on your life in some ways, I got the sense of that. I really felt like I was meeting real people, but really going on a journey with them on their different feelings about how they feel about the afterlife, or how this particular main character called Richie, which I think is based on you. Is this true?
It is, yes.
I thought so, because it's fabulous, really. So before we actually delve into the character so we can understand the character, why don't we ask a little, let our listeners learn a little bit about you. When did you first develop an interest in the paranormal?
Well, it started, it always comes to you when you least expect it. But for me, it was in 1979, about a week before my birthday. Some of this was in the book for the Richie character, but occurred to him between 8th and 9th grades in his high school. When you walk fiction and nonfiction together in a storyline, you know, sometimes I had to throw some real life things in there, but for the base of the character. For me, though, it was my first experience with death. It was a week before my 21st birthday. My best friend growing up, I'd met him when I was 2 years old. We moved into a neighborhood that I spent all my childhood in, and he was my next door neighbor, Stephen. And we hit it off from the first day on. It was really my first soulmate relationship, though I was too young to know it at the time. And, it wasn't competitive, you know. If he really wanted to do some things, I would cave in and vice versa. It wasn't about who had more stuff, you know, who was bigger, who was stronger. It was nice, you know, and it was a good sharing time. He was kind of a horrible driver, so it was a kind of a cruel irony. We thought he would be accident prone, but the accident that ultimately took his life was not his fault. He was riding a motorcycle, and a drunk driver had ran a red light and basically threw Stephen into this big car. Stephen, on the motorbike, hit it head first, was brain dead when they brought him to the hospital. And ultimately, it was, his parents had to go from New York to Florida, where he was, to eventually make the horrid decision of unplugging him. So it wasn't, he wasn't even dead when I first heard about it, and how do you grieve something that's not yet gone? But one night, it was very late, like 2 a.m, I had grabbed a couple of quarts of beer to try to process this thing, and I went on a swing set in my parents' backyard. It's kind of a long story, so I'll make it short. There was some sort of energy on the swing next to me, and I wasn't really sure if it was the beer or what, but it was distinct and kind of a third eye thing, you know, because it's not like I saw it with my own eyes or heard it with mine own ears, but it was there, and it was distinct, and it was as real as the hair on the back of my hand. So at any rate, I realized that it was Stephen on the swing next to me. And look, I had in that week had a lot of conversations in my head. You know, what would I say if I got a chance to talk to him? But still, these conversations were, you know, my voice talking as Stephen, you know, and my words talking as Stephen. And in this situation here on the swing, it was completely different, and Stephen said things that I, in my wildest imaginings, couldn't possibly think of. because he said that he came to give up. He wanted to give up, and he came for my blessing. And I'm like, what do you mean give up? You know, he says, well, look, I'm brain dead. I'm a vegetable, you know. I wasn't brought into this world to live like this, you know. He'd spent all of his childhood and most of his young adulthood, you know, being a very independent, trying to emancipate himself from his own parents. So he wasn't just going to lie there and let other people do everything for him. So I tried to talk him out of it, but he eventually made his point very clear. He had really come from my blessing and eventually got it, you know. And I told him, I said, look, I get your point, you know. He didn't want to live like that. You know, science wasn't going to catch up. So I gave him my blessing and my love, and I asked him, you know, if you get a chance to visit, you know, after, you know, I hope to see you at least, you know, if that's even possible. And he thanked me and got his blessing, and he was gone. Within about 7 minutes, and again, by this time it's 3 a.m, my mother comes out of the house way in the back of the yard to the swing set where I was. I had, in all my life, never known her to be awake at 3 a.m, let alone out of the house talking to me. But she said, look, Stephen's parents just called. They pulled the plug on him out of respect. They wanted you to be the first to know. And so she made it clear in timeline and everything that, you know, I had talked to my first soulmate, my best friend in life, at the moment of his death. And, you know, that didn't match with all the things that people told me about death, you know. And, you know, I was exhilarated and puzzled, you know, and that, I think, really changed my life. And ever since that day in 1979, you know, I've been looking into this from all different angles. And, you know, I have worked with the paranormal and the ghost hunting things. And I was attuned as a medium for about 6 years or so, and it was a while back. Ultimately, I didn't go to school for it. You know, I didn't take courses. I didn't. It was kind of I walked through it myself.
That's how most mediums go through it, by the way. So don't feel bad.
Oh, okay, good.
I think it's a natural thing. I think, just if I can get add a little bit to that, I think most mediums who do it as their life's work, I mean, there are purported metaphysical schools out there, but you go to it naturally because you're going into a spiritual place and you're naturally drawn to help and work with spirit. So you were a spirit medium, and I don't feel slighted because you didn't go to school for it. I think the spirit is our school. I really believe that.
Yeah, I love that you say that, and so yes, I absolutely agree with you. but largely now, you know, I was myself in a car accident about a little over 17 years ago, almost 18 now, and it's given me some chronic pain. Part of dealing with that over that 17-year history, and it's not a poor, pitiful me thing, but it does define every decision I make now in life. And part of that was at a time where I wasn't handling it well, and boy, I just wanted to die, you know, and I was just in that place. And ultimately, I started I think the dead basically saved my life, you know. I was at a low point, and I guess the best way you could describe it is some earthbound energies. Some people that I later learned in my dealings with them either suicided or were very unhappy with the method of their deaths or, you know, the voids that were left with the living still, that they ultimately dug me out of this deep place. And to this day, I feel so sincerely indebted to them. So it's like my mission to represent them in positive light. You know, where the medium process is a very loving, kind, and gesturing one, you know, the paranormal process is laden with fear-based TV shows you know, it's the entertainment industry can't snap out of that horror film.
Right.
Type of thing, and so I've kind of become an ambassador for nice and
I like it.
And loving respect. You know,
as it should be. I think that's a beautiful thing. We need people like you out there, that's for sure. So just on that topic, how did you come up with the title of your book then, Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth?
Well, I was struggling with it. I had written a science fiction work, which still has yet to be published, but it had a really awesome title. So I was trying to capture that. You know, in talking about science fiction, it would take too much time away from this. And since this is the book that got published, I started writing the book. Initially, I was going to do a nonfiction piece, you know, about my first-person perspective as a mm-hmm. medium, some of the spirits I had counseled or crossed, and you know, the rainbow between the families of, you know, the survivors and those who did not survive. And I started writing the piece. I wanted to really stick to this murder mystery and not really give our central medium character a family or anything. And ultimately, I had to, and I got stuck. So I, on one of my radio shows called Beyond the Norm, which is on the A1B radio network, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern, I had the good fortune to interview a friend of mine who's a Pennsylvania State Trooper. This gentleman, his name is Mark Kies. He works on malevolent hauntings. They have a team with law enforcement officials, local cops, state police, FBI agents, you know, emergency technicians, you know, all these different types of service people. And he was talking about, you know, I asked him the most obvious question, I guess, you know, if you're a policeman and you work with malevolent hauntings, you know, who do you think is worse, the living or the dead? And he said, without hesitation or question, the living, because living people can do things that you can't even imagine the level of malevolence, whereas he's never seen, you know, ghosts do something like that. And that turned everything around, and suddenly I introduced the character of Detective Locke in my book. Our medium has a best friend who has been charged with murder. And
yes.
In the book, it's a homicide detective that gives him the news and really shakes our medium out of his platform. The odd thing is that the best friend who's charged with murder, he's not into talking to the dead or any of that. You know, he never embraced that idea at all. But with evidence piling up, he's desperate, and he asks our medium if the medium can talk to the murder victim in order to maybe get some alibi evidence or clear the name. And then it brought up if the dead can lie to us while we're in communication with them, because his first communication was a little shaky and led him to think maybe the best friend did it, or maybe the spirit in question is lying. And that, in my years of medium practice, never even came up. I never even thought about it. You know, but with the paranormal, and you have, you know, the demonic and malevolent and malicious entities, and of course they're lying, or, oh, if there are spirits in a house when you're doing a paranormal investigation, of course they're evil. How could they not be? Because you can't see them. They have to be there to jam you up, you know? And it got to a point where I think more people that I was talking to as I was writing the book were interested in if the dead can lie to us or not than they were about the murder mystery. And ultimately, on chapter 13, I think, our central character recites to his wife a poem that he read in high school about, and in the base line of that poem was, even the dead won't tell you the truth. And I said, ooh, there we go, you know.
There's the name. It's interesting that now I know just who you based your two first characters on. Obviously, Richie is you. And there was an interesting conversation that went on in that first chapter when the detective Locke comes to the door. And if I read it correctly, you know, Richie kind of goes into a little mini reading on the detective,
yeah.
And the
mm-hmm.
reaction of the what was very surprising to me was the reaction of the detective. He was nonchalant about it, like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that's all
yeah.
right. You know, and to me, that's intriguing because I think it's probably pretty rare, you know, and it's nice to know that it's based on someone that's alive and breathing. But it's pretty rare to think of a detective to be into mediums so casually or nonchalantly. That's why you made that choice, I assume.
It is, and part of it was a couple of other things. One, my love and respect for the police, but even more so than that, working with the paranormal is a whole different planet than mediums. And there's kind of a significant gap between the metaphysical people and the paranormal people,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like there is generally between non-police officers and police officers. And I kind of wanted to bring all those worlds together, but some of the most well-charactered people I had met in my paranormal travels were police officers. Steve DeShavi, who works on a show on the Travel Channel called The Dead Files.
Mm-hmm.
He was a homicide detective in Manhattan North Precinct, which is a horrid place to have to work, let alone be a Gold Shield in for 25 years. Then the aforementioned Mark Kies, who's done some of the criminal investigating as a detective for the state police. You know, he worked with narcotics mostly, but also worked major cases. And Bruce Tango, who is the father of Dave Tango, who's on the show Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel. Also, these three gentlemen, as I met them, because I thought that most police would, you know, look at us cross-eyed as soon as we talked about either ghosts or medium. You
sure.
know, and that had been my experience until I had met these guys. So I kind of threw it in almost for shock value to say, wow, I mean, he's so nonchalant about this reading and he was affected by it, you know, this detective, you know, in the first chapter. And it kind of sets off this relationship. And it was based on Mark Kies in real life because he, you know, I mean, this guy goes into very dark places, you know, and takes the work very seriously.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what set me off right away is like, whoa, that was an interesting reaction from the police officer. And what's also interesting, and I'm kind of wondering how you base this, was how comfortably and at ease the character Richie felt about just doing an impromptu reading. Is that how you are in life? Or what made you make that choice in that character? I'm curious.
That's how I was, you know. Look, I can't really say that I am well attuned as I used to be. I'm very good now with tarot readings, but my level of standard is extremely high, because when I was attuned, I would, you know, the standard that I held myself against was John Edward, because he was at that time, you know, the finest medium that I had seen. You know, and he was very love and light oriented, very mm-hmm. connection to family and friends oriented. And I didn't see that with a lot of the other television mediums or some of the mediums that I had met in life, most of which were not very good. So when I was doing even better in my, according to my own expectation, than the standard I was held against, you know, and the fact that I just cannot do that anymore is very telling. And with being on radio and talking to different people from paranormal, metaphysics, and physics and science, parapsychology, etc., mm-hmm. I've seen that this TV now has kind of given us a show-me attitude,
oh, yeah.
you know.
That's
so
true.
You're a medium, so who died around me, you know? And
yeah.
don't say it's an M name, I want to know, you know? And suddenly mm-hmm. it's all about the circus act. And,
right.
And but when I was talking to people in that time and talking with spirit in that time, because of the pain, and again, not a poor, pitiful me thing, but here's an honest portrayal, you know. Sometimes you are just hurt to the point where it's down to your soul. It has gotten me to communicate with people on a soul level. You know, if I ask people how they are, I really want to know, You know, I really want to know why they're feeling how they're feeling. I like to put myself in other people's shoes and try to see the world through their visage, you know. And the spirits that I would come across in those days, it was really much the same. I would counsel. I came across a lot of suicides. I came across a lot of people with this horrid void. You know, maybe they didn't get a chance to say goodbye to someone. Maybe they didn't believe they were dead. You know, I mean, all these different circumstances, and I just ended up talking to people on this soul level. You know, I can still do that now with the tarot cards, but mm-hmm. not so much in the mediumistic setting. But it's just how I've come to communicate. Because to me, every person, living or dead, is a story. And if you take the time to listen to their story, you know, then A, you learn so much about people, and B, you just really get a good grasp of the world, you know, not in judgmental, defensive settings like a housewife show or reality TV, but just how people really are when you isolate them in this neat little place for about 5 minutes and say, tell me who you are, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
In that setting, and talking to the detective and gathering almost immediately that he had a father who never told him he was proud of him, you know?
Right.
And that changed now that with the father's passing, you know, the father was a drinker. The father saw that this not being proud of his son thing motivated the son. And now his work was done. And now mm-hmm. his work was done and his life was done. He really needed to convey to the detective, it's not about that anymore. And so here, almost instantly, right off the bat in the book, you know, this nonchalant, you know, off-the-cuff reading from the medium to the detective got to a very deep place. And it was almost ironic that, you know, it really didn't affect the detective that much, at least visibly, you know.
Right.
And the detective almost like wiped it off like it was an everyday thing, which
yeah.
allows at least me in my mind and the reader to think that maybe this detective works a lot more than psychics than he may be letting on.
Interesting. We're speaking with Chip Reichenthal. He is author of Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to go to the part of the book where the character Richie struggles with the reasons as to why his dead, murdered friend Susie isn't coming through right away. Why is that? And maybe you can, as a listener, relate to maybe when you're grieving, why it is that you can't necessarily get those signs or hear from your loved ones right away. We'll be right back. My name is Angelina Diane. Diana, you're listening to Signs of Life Radio.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to Signs of Life Radio, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation, located on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I'm your host, Angelina Diana, and we've been talking with Chip Reichenthal, who is author of Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. It's a fictional book with a lot of, actually, nonfiction in it in some ways, but it's a very interesting read, and I recommend that you purchase it because it not only does it, and welcome back to the program, Chip, I should say that. Welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you liked the book.
I do. I think it's really neat because it does start off with this, you know, sad story of the main character's friend potentially being murdered and there's something wrong. But then you take the main character, Richie, through a personal journey of understanding his past and also understanding how he connects and has been connecting to spirit. But this time, it's a little more personal because it's someone personal that has passed. And it seems to affect him. By chapter 8, I was really intrigued by chapter 8.
Oh, thank you.
Because for me personally, to see you weave into the story some viewpoints of how mediums think of other mediums or how they think of themselves and how sometimes they might question how they get information. You talk at one point, there's quite a few things, but the one thing you at some point make this, the character makes this proclamation that not too sure why Susie's not coming through is clearly, could it be due to her transition or maybe it might have to do with Richie himself and how he's struggling. Can you kind of speak to our listeners about maybe the view from a medium's viewpoint if they want to reach someone personally and maybe how you interwove that into this character and the struggle with that? If you could speak
absolutely
to that a little bit.
And thank you for asking. Actually, chapter 8, I think, was my favorite chapter too, so that's very cool. But Yeah, the victim here is she was the prettiest girl in school. The mm-hmm. best friend who's charged with her murder was like the big man on campus, you know, and even though that's kind of a novelty point for books, it worked out here and kind of transferred into real life because I was the best friend of the biggest guy in school, you know. But that has nothing to do with your question. So, but he was trying to contact the murder victim, mm-hmm. and he had, at least for the sake of the book, had a very special relationship with her because even though, you know, she was kind of outclassed him per se, you know, he kind of considered himself one of the regular guys, but she was the prettiest girl in school and she went out with the best friend who was the, you know, the biggest guy in school. But our central character, she was the first one who kind of embraced his ability to talk to mm-hmm. the dead when he started doing it, you know, early on in high school years. And because she was so popular, you know, her having his back saved him from ridicule, you know. Mm-hmm. I've talked to so many people who grew up psychic that were bullied or had to hide this from their friends, their jobs, their church, their social communities, and that was a big deal. And they had this very special bond. And he was really in a state of disdain because he wasn't connecting with her. And he wasn't sure if it maybe was because here's a girl that had everything handed to her in life and was taken away in such a quick, stunningly violent manner mm-hmm. that maybe he was concerned that it really tore her to the core. You know, I mean, death is one thing, but death in that manner to someone who lived in that manner could have really been rather trying on her. But ultimately, he came to the conclusion that it was him. Mm-hmm. In his emotional state, and I made a point for the book that I was true to me, and I think is true to an awful lot of mediums, that our emotional palate should be clean. You know, mm-hmm. we do deal with a lot of things that are potentially sad or potentially angering, or we could get swept up in their emotion and, mm-hmm. You know, throw us off our game. You know, there were a lot of people in my day that I counseled as suicides or as murder victims that had very, very, you know, sad stories and were still swimming in that sadness, especially the suicides. And it was my job in good counsel to not show that to them, you know, mm-hmm. and that I let that go through in the book. I also, in real life, worked with some of the mentally ill. I taught computer skills to schizophrenics for a few years at a nonprofit in my hometown, and that was a very interesting job. But at the same time, we were not allowed to show our emotions to them because we might set off something in them that would be counterproductive to their benefit or their healing. And mm-hmm. I found the same thing sometimes for some of the discarnate that I had worked with. And ultimately, I think for the sake of the book and for the sake of making a very good point, you know, he realized really that he was so emotionally caught up in this. I mean, here's his best friend and this girl who he had one of the most special bonds in throughout his life, that, you know, that were changed forever. And it had a great impact on him personally, and he realized that it was him. He would have to, you know, clear himself emotionally to better reach out to the murder victim.
It's a very valid point because I think when you sit across from someone who's grieving and they look at someone who seemingly is connecting the medium easily, mm-hmm. it's a bit easy for someone who's not emotionally connected to the spirit that they're representing to connect a little cleaner and clearer. But mediums too have losses, and they have to be more of a personal communicator and have to clean their palate, as you put it, or clear their energy. And it's really, I think, a very humbling thing to write, because I think one thing we need to do is knock mediums down a little bit. Some of them are up on their pedestal a little too high. And I think the fact that you wrote that is a beautiful thing, because people would say to me, oh, it must be so easy for you to connect to your mom. I'm like, no, it's not.
No,
it's not. So I love the fact that you wrote that. The other thing, too, in this chapter that I love, because I get this question a lot, too, is the viewpoint on how three different mediums can connect to the same spirit, but the messages are different. Can you elaborate on that for our listeners?
Yeah, in a couple of ways. And I also like to bring up the point, you know, because he, at least in the book, was doing group readings and doing individual readings. And he was there to heal others, to help heal others. That's very true to my life. That's how I deal with my pain. If I can somehow find a way to heal somebody, even to a very small degree, it has a healing effect on me. And so that made it very important for the medium. But I thought, and I think, especially now, you know, doing radio and interviewing some of the greatest minds and talents in the paranormal or metaphysical or scientific realms, that our own belief systems and our own reality is where everything begins and ends. You know, just like the question always comes up, is there a curse without a belief in a curse? But I found and still find, you know, especially now with the TV shows, it brings out a lot of what I call the American Idol factor, where you have people, look, and of course everyone can have some degree of psychic ability, but you've got people that are watching TV shows that are sending out wrong messages, fear-based messages, or this or that. So they believe, after watching these shows, that they're mediums too.
Right.
And so, you know, not only are they basing that on wrong information, but, you know, they're doing it wrong and badly. And because, you know, grandma said they were doing a good job. So, you know, they think they're the, you know, the next coming. But even with, you know, look, and working psychic fairs and things, there are people that have robes, you know, candles and bells and books.
I know.
And their outfits do most of the talking for them. And that I was a little off-put by that often, because you got some guy in the corner that looks like an accountant, you know, who's the best medium in the room. But I think that, you know, because you could ask three different mediums to read the same family, and they'll come up with completely different, you know, questions or answers or viewpoints, it's because everything starts from their own belief systems. You know, our perception is our reality. You know, I also worked in hypnosis and got neuro-linguistic programming and get to the subconscious mind and how to open that up. And you'll see that we use our subconscious mind really about 90% of the time. And what's standing between that supercomputer we call a subconscious mind and our conscious mind is this barrier of judgment, this barrier of negativity, the thing that has a tendency to believe the worst in others or ourselves first before the good stuff, you know. And this is the same kind of barrier that may have some sort of effect on the way each medium reads someone, you know.
That's food for thought, I think, when you go for a reading, you know, that you have to keep in mind the practice of the medium and if they are a practitioner versus an entertainer. But unfortunately, Chip, I can't believe it. Our time is up. I can't believe
it's
gone
by so quickly.
Oh my goodness. We've been speaking with Chip Reichenthal. He is author and an expert of many things, but author of the fictional book, Even the Dead Won't Tell the Truth. I highly recommend it. It's really an interesting story, and we purposely didn't tell you the end because it is also a murder mystery, folks. It's very interesting. And just really quickly, is there going to be a second book? Because I got the feeling how you ended it, that there might be a second book, characters going on and on. Just a quick answer on that one.
We may come to that. I should let the listeners know it is available now in ebook form in addition to paperback. That's a new thing. That can be found on Amazon.com, and even the dead won't tell you the truth. Plus, the publisher themselves is Rowe Publishing, R-O-W-E. And because you don't have to go through a middleman, I highly recommend that you go through the Rowe Publishing website at rowepub.com/eventhedead. And also Barnes & Noble, and available in bookstores nationwide. And if it's not, then you can ask the bookstore to get that sucker in for you.
Wonderful, Chip. Thank you so much. And I believe we'll have a link on the foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank our wonderful guest. Thanks, Spirit. And remember, your loved ones are a heartbeat away, and science is going to prove it. I'm Angelina Diana. Have a good night, everyone.